themselves in drag. A monkey. It's ridiculous, don't you think?
I couldn't agree.
Oh, hello. Oh God. Sorry. This is the Simon and Joe film show. I'm Simon.
I'm Joe, and you shouldn't have obviously heard that. I will put that out of your mind right now. Yeah, instead.
Just forget it. Forget it all.
Just focus on the show, which this week is about Black Swan.
So we've got Black Swan, the big Darren Aronofsky film.
Can we say Black Swan again? It's a Black Swan.
Black Swan. Can we do a swan sound? What's swan sound like?
Nice, good
impression there. You could be a swan.
I am, well, some people are swans, so...
Nice,
okay.
Indeed.
Okay, those are references. If you've seen the film, you'll understand. Will you?
Maybe.
Whatever films.
Barney's Version is a film we're going to discuss later on, and we've also got Ned's, which is Peter Mullen's latest effort.
Oh, who directed Barney's Version? Lewis? Somebody... Richard Lewis.
Yes, Richard Lewis.
Yeah.
Not the Richard Lewis from A Curb Your Enthusiasm. Different Richard Lewis.
Great. And it stars Giamatti.
Yeah.
Everybody, when you say that name, everybody knows who you're talking about. Oh. I don't even need to go. Pike, Driver, you know who I'm talking about. Hoffman.
Fishes and cars.
No, I'm talking about actors.
I see where you're going. That makes sense.
It's going to be a good episode. A lot of new releases, so obviously there'll be news, Oscar nominations out, so that'll be excellent.
Yeah, so live from Clapham, the Simon and Joe film show. The Black Swan.
Wow, you say that so well, Simon. What are you talking about when you say that?
I mean Darren Aronofsky's latest film.
Classic.
The Oscar nominated.
5 Oscar nominations? About that. I've looked at the post. It's got a lot of BAFTA nominations as well. So
yeah.
Bloody good, well, it must be.
Save your Oscar talk. We will talk more about Oscars
later. Yeah,
okay,
all right. What's the film about? We know who this Darren Aronofsky chap is. We know about The Fountain. We know about The Wrestler and Pie and Requiem for a Dream. What's this one about, Simon?
Well, this one is about a character, Nina. She's a dancer, and she wants to be...
A ballet dancer.
A ballet dancer.
Jesus.
And she wants to appear in the new version of Swan Lake, directed by no other than Vincent Cassell.
Also known as Thomas.
And indeed...
Not quite a name, is it? It just needs an extra letter.
Indeed. And she is striving to be that perfect swan who... It's a difficult role, we'll say that.
Because you've got the white swan, who is pure and virginal, like Nina, and then you've got the black swan, who's dark and sexy.
And the role is played by the same person, so she has to be able to explore both these sides and try and strive for, like I said, that perfection.
Yeah.
Now I've got to tell you.
What are you going to tell me?
I was going to say.
When
I watched this at the cinema.
Okay, this is a personal story.
When I watched that at the cinema, I watched it and it was incredible. And when I was there was two like mid 40 year olds next to me, and they were virtually doing commentary during the film.
How annoying!
So it was the whole kind of there's one bit in it. Yeah, we'll get to the review really in detail in a second, but it was towards the end. And it's a pretty big session. And when it happened, everybody goes quiet in the cinema because you're all like in shock. You know what I mean? Like that. And these two ladies were next to me going, oh, God. Oh, shit. Oh, God. And they just kept saying it. It was awful.
How annoying.
It was incredible.
Could you get them chucked out?
I couldn't get them chucked out. They were like 40-year-old women. It was like they just popped down the cinema.
Okay, well, those people shouldn't be going to the cinema. I would lock them out.
Fact of the matter is... Black Swan is what I watched.
Yeah.
And hopefully that won't happen in future for you fine folks.
No. But, will you watch it again just to get rid of that bad taste?
Possibly. Probably should.
Okay. Well, I think we've arrived at a point now where we should play a clip.
4 years, every time you dance, I see you obsessed, getting each and every move perfectly right, but I never see you lose yourself. Ever. All that discipline for what?
Just
want to
be perfect.
You what?
I want to be perfect.
Perfection is not just about control. It's also about letting go. Surprise yourself so you can surprise the audience. Transcendence. And very few have it in them.
I think I do have it in them.
Ah! You bit me? I can't believe you bit me.
I'm sorry.
Fantastico.
Fantastic stuff. I mean, you know, we haven't really gone into much. The story is that she wants to be a dancer, she's a bit conflicted, you know.
That's
she
the big
can't
issue.
She can't nail this black swan, and she gets close to it, and you got Vincent Cassell helping her, and you got Mila Kunis helping her,
yeah,
and you know, and you got her mum helping her, played by Barbara Hershey, lovely stuff,
yeah.
And they're, you know, they're being not very nice to her in order to get her to be the black swan, and she yeah. doesn't know how to respond, so she goes a bit mental.
Yeah, no, it's a bit out there. What's funny is that if you were to pigeonhole it in a genre,
I don't think you could.
I'd say horror slash surrealist movie, and this is weird because
surrealist.
I heard the horror thing before I watched it, but it's difficult even going into it. I was like, horror? How is this going to be a horror?
It's ballet.
It's just ballet. But alas, it is truly horrible.
Pretty horrible.
It's pretty
horrible. I've got to say, I jumped a couple of times.
Oh my God.
There were a couple of times I, you know, scrunching my eyes up. I didn't look away, but there were some unpleasant moments. You know, it's rare for a film to do that, I think, for me anyway.
But,
and I was,
yeah.
you know, I mean, it'd been very distinct places, but it wasn't constantly. It's not like a slasher film where it's constantly, in your
but
face.
But I think it's
certain
fair to say,
moments.
If, I mean, you can't, I mean, this is one thing, I mean, which I've read many places about genre, about how genre is these strict codes and conventions, but you don't have to. The problem is that, that kind of limits film's potential. So, you know, by saying it's a horror, that's probably the closest one you can assign it to, but it is by no means, I guess, you know what I mean, exclusively.
It's a psychological thriller as
psychological
well.
Thriller, yeah, you know what I mean, it's a personal drama. I hate that genre, drama.
It is a drama.
Yeah, it is a drama.
Is it a comedy? I didn't laugh.
No, I didn't laugh. Definitely not a comedy.
Wait, there might have been one or two moments when I laughed when it was so that the violent, you know, the anger,
it was grotesque.
Absurdism. Grotesque, that's a word we can
So
use.
Let's get into this. What do you think?
Well, I went into it very excited. Obviously.
You were. Yeah,
I've been excited.
For
it was
ages.
At the London Film Festival, but, you know, big screenings, couldn't get into them. I've been wanting to see it. I thought it was going to come out at the end of last year. It was going to be my best film of the year. You know,
yeah.
It was going to be up there. I embarrassed myself on Twitter by saying it was coming out, and then everybody said, shut up.
Yeah.
So I said, all right, it's coming out January next year. So, you know, I mean, I haven't seen The King's Speech. We've discussed that at length.
Yeah.
This is the film I'm most excited about at the beginning of the year.
So what did you think?
Yeah, no, I bloody enjoyed it.
It's
very, very good. I was completely and utterly gripped the whole time. I had no idea what was going to happen next. It started with the camera right in Natalie Portman's face.
Yes, yes it does.
And it pretty much didn't leave her alone.
It's crazy. The camera work is incredible. It's always showing these, like, following shots as it's, like, just behind her head as her little, like, little pretty neck and a little pretty
head. Oh, you
head
liked
and
her neck.
Back of her head.
You liked her neck.
A little hair.
It's good that you picked out her neck.
It's quite, well, it's on all, like, she's just walking around. You're like following her around all the time.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's like she is like the central performance, and she is incredible. I mean, the Oscar nom and the Oscar
win. Apparent Oscar win.
I mean, let's be honest. You know, it's worth it. I mean, this is an incredible performance.
She's so scared. She's so fragile. I mean, you
fragile,
know, she looks scared. Her body is so fragile, and her eyes just communicate this constant, never end. I mean, it's also a rites of passage film for her. She's been brought up by her mother, and she's mollycoddled essentially in this ballet company where she's in the background and given the opportunity now to reach out.
But she's arrogant and she's smug.
Really?
Yes.
No.
Come on.
She's so nervous about stuff going wrong.
It's that kind of but
perfecting
then
it.
Yeah, but there's a certain arrogance in that she has that role, and you know there is a reason why the cast members kind of have that attitude towards her with their where they're like, oh, she's been
she's
come
very,
down to see
she's
us.
She's very alone.
Yeah.
No, she's come down to see her because she has to be separate.
I felt there was a certain air of arrogance to her, and I think it's I can appreciate. I think she is a complex character. I think a lot of people can look into her in different ways, and that's what's so well played, I think, about Natalie Portman's performance. But I think at the same time there's a certain, you know, she's lonely, but then I did also find her a bit annoying with her pink room.
Okay. Well,
get rid
that's
of the
not
bloody
her fault. That's her mum's
that is
fault.
Pathetic.
That's her mum's fault.
Come
and
on.
She does reject that. I mean,
she could have rebelled.
What we're talking about, she
less
does
of the pink.
She does rebel. I mean, what we're talking about really is the realism side of it. When we haven't even gone into the surrealism, where she's having these nightmares and you don't know what's real and what's not.
Yeah.
And not just nightmares, she's having fantasies. She's enjoying them.
Yeah.
And there's pain and there's blood and, you know, and she's
and
seeing
sex.
Things. And you don't, well, yes, of course, there's sex, but you don't know what's real. I mean, even at the end, you know, I mean, the ending is something to debate, but we don't want to give away a spoiler.
Yeah.
But you don't know what's real, you know, up until a certain point, and it's just constantly playing with you. And the way she looks, I mean, I remember particularly when she is finally playing the Black Swan and she has the makeup on, and she's completely different. And you see the point they've been making along all along about how different the Black Swan has to be.
Yes.
And she has achieved that.
Yes.
And she does look and act completely different. And it's a completely...
Transformation.
I mean, in so much... I mean, a physical transformation and an acting transformation as well. It's very impressive work.
And I think it's all... I mean, we're talking about... I mean, let's quickly get into Mila Kunis. I mean, Mila Kunis I thought was good.
I thought she was great, and I thought Vincent Cassel was great. I don't know why those two haven't been nominated for awards. I think Mila Kunis, because she plays practically the opposite of Natalie Portman in many ways, just pops up and twists Natalie Portman, you know, this way and that. And without her carefreeness, the tightness of Natalie Portman wouldn't be as intriguing.
Yeah, Natalie Portman's intense. I mean, this is the thing, is that she is so intense, and that's why she dominates the screen so much, because of her intense desire to be perfect, whilst Mila Kunis is not like that. She hasn't got that same attitude, so maybe you can imagine she's quite unimportant, but in fact she is, like you said, the yin to the yang. She balances it out with Vincent Cassell's kind of slimy seducer in the centre.
Well, I wouldn't call him slimy.
I think so.
I think he sneers down at everyone in a kind of in a French way, but I don't think he's slimy. I think he, you know, he's searching for perfection into, you know, he's a director of the ballet, and he has to play her a certain way.
Wouldn't you have thought
to get a reaction?
Wouldn't you have thought though that certain, like, he's quite the seducer. Clearly, he seems to have got it on with a lot of the cast and especially the lead women, I guess.
I don't know.
With Winona Ryder and whatnot.
I think, you know, he does that to pull performances out of people. It's not a particularly pleasant trait, but as we learn, the ballet world isn't a particularly pleasant world.
But do you think that maybe there's probably less heterosexual men in ballet? Because there seem to be a lot of the guys seem to get on with the girls, and I'm pretty sure that's not normally the case.
I don't know.
Maybe I'm wrong. I've never been a ballet person.
No, okay, I don't know. That's the answer to that question. That's a tangent we've gone off on there. I think we can pull it back to Vincent Cassel and say that, you know, he really inhabits this kind of I mean, you know, it's not just him, it's the mother as well.
Yeah,
and
so
Kunis,
sinister.
Where they push Natalie Portman, and she's too fragile to be pushed. I mean, you know, when I speak of the mother, I speak of Barbara Hershey. She follows every compliment with a criticism and then a compliment again. So she is probably the most effective in pulling her in so many different ways. I remember a scene with a cake.
Yeah.
She said, oh, have some cake. Oh, you don't want some cake.
Messed up, yeah.
Oh, and it's like, and then the mum, you know,
the
confrontation and argument with the mum is quite a, you know, I mean, just that their mum is so evil, but you just, I mean, she's more complex than that, I think.
No, and I think it's also, you know, she's got that kind of Cheshire Cat kind of grin, all very sinister, very evil. But I think, you know, I think it's a good point maybe to discuss. First off, I mean, there's lots of film references. I mean, Mark Kermode mentioned references such as Suspiria and Dario Argento. At the same time, Cronenberg's Metamorphosis of the Fly. And then you've also got David Lynch and that kind of reflection, those dual personalities and that kind of lesbianism, which is in things like Mulholland Drive. But I think it's worth noting, you also got the Red Shoes right in there, that it's like a ballet, but it also has like this performance within the film itself. So like the Red Shoes was about the actual ballet performance of the Red Shoes and how it had this parallel to the actual story you were watching. Same with Black Swan. Let's talk about The Wrestler and the comparison. I think in that regard, you've got this similar kind of clearly intertwined thing with destruction of someone and perfection, but these two different roles. I mean, what do you feel about that?
Yeah, no, they are both searching for perfection. I think the wrestler's perfection is very different. I mean, yeah, it's much less beautiful than a ballet perfection.
Imperfect.
But it has its place, so to speak. I think Natalie Portman's search for perfection is much more focused and sharp. That film is much. I mean, the wrestler meanders around all over the place. He doesn't know what he's doing, whereas Natalie Portman knows too well what she wants and yes. then gets pulled in other places. He doesn't have the psychological craziness that she has. Like, I'm going this way, and then I'm that way, and, you know, and
yeah.
particularly that club scene where she's all over the club and the strobe.
That's great, yeah.
So, you know, I think essentially what Darren Aronofsky is getting down to is potentially a difference between men and women in a very general sense. Very difficult to say this is anything beyond the generalization, but he's exploring masculinity with the wrestler, and then he's exploring femininity with Black Swan, and you know, both worlds are severely flawed, but both worlds he introduces very unpleasant and difficult stuff in order to give the film dramatic tension. He's not just shooting a kitchen sink drama, for example, where men and women just chat about their problems. And in particular with Black Swan, he takes it to another level, and, you know, and maybe he's being unfair to women. He makes them crazy. I mean, she's so body conscious.
Yeah.
She's so.
But I think this
unhinged,
might be what we're
competitive.
I think this is what we're going to. It's not necessarily perfection, maybe. It's maybe the ideal man and the ideal woman, in that if you think about wrestling, that is like such a masculine thing. It's animalistic, it's fighting, it's mano a mano and all that type of thing, and that you could argue, not me personally, you could argue that's the ideal man. And then on the other side of it, you've got the ballerinas, and they're very beautiful, body conscious, like you said, all these different things, very feminine. So maybe rather than perfection, it's an obsession for being the ideal male or the ideal woman, and how destructive these two forces are, perhaps.
Well, perhaps Aronofsky is looking and saying this is what society perceives the perfect man and woman to be, or has been in the past,
yeah.
or could be on one level, and then he, you know, he's picking it apart and saying, look beneath the surface to the graceful ballet dancer, to the strong wrestler, and actually beneath the surface they're pretty damaged individuals. I guess Mickey Rourke is physically damaged,
yeah.
Natalie Portman is mentally damaged by the search for perfection, and ultimately, you know, the people that don't search for perfection, the Maria Tomis or the Mila Kunis,
yeah.
they have more fun.
They do. And also, I mean, I think there's another point. One thing note I made was how in The Wrestler it's almost like he's dying towards, he's dying for that last fight. That's what he's going for. He's got that obsession to get to that last fight. That's what he's going for. Whereas I don't feel in Black Swan you're waiting for her to die in the last dance. That's not what you're going for, is it?
Well, you know what I mean? She is desperate to give the most incredible
Perfect performance, yeah.
And, you know, and once she's given that, then she'll be happy.
She will indeed. Okay.
Well, I think we do have, I mean, we've given a very male perspective.
Yeah, we want to balance this. I mean, we want to make it
one
fair.
Woman, one comment.
I think Black Swan was a very dramatic and dark film.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for
I feel like that's
balanced. You're genius.
Yeah, and it's balanced this.
Review has now become a balanced review.
Yeah, exactly. No bias here. Some news, some film news. First up, Joe.
The Oscar nominations, presumably.
We'll leave them to last. We'll get through the big guns first. Okay. Should we get through the smaller fish?
Yeah, okay.
Will Smith apparently is going to do Annie. The sun will come out
tomorrow. Like he did for his son with the old Karate Kid, he's going to put his daughter in a remake of Annie.
Now, when I was younger, we had a family of six, and at one point, for your birthday, you would get a bike. Only once. Yeah, every single member of our family would get, like, a bike at one point. We used to have second-hand bikes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, but for one birthday, we'd get one for brand new from Halfords,
wow.
which cost £100. We were really proud. Do you think that, you know, making a film with your kid in is, like, a thing in the Will Smith household? Like, when they reach the age of something, they go, happy birthday, we're making The Karate Kid. Or,
yeah.
happy birthday, we're making Annie.
Probably. I would think that's exactly. And I would think he would also say, who do you want to help out? And obviously, Jaden was like, get Jackie Chan in. He was like, all right, I will.
Yeah.
And Willow was like, get Jay-Z in. He was like, all right, I will.
Yeah.
So Jay-Z's in. Brilliant.
There you go. So there you go.
Yeah.
So we're not.
Yeah, you feel slightly deprived now.
I feel like your
childhood.
My bike wasn't good enough. Where's right. my film, Mummy? That's what I want to know.
This is okay. Definitely go with that. Maybe she could put you in the third Tron film.
Well, there's details being released about a teaser for Tron 3. apparently going to be attached to the Tron Legacy DVD or Blu-ray when it is released. Now, this is quite weird because obviously Tron Legacy didn't make as much money as they expected. Not that it didn't make money, it was just nowhere near as much as they expected. And obviously the whole Cillian Murphy thing, you know what I mean, his cameo in the first one kind of gave the impression that they were going to do more. Now, there is rumours that David Warner, who plays Sark in the first Tron, is in a role in the third one, and this small trailer, which is potentially going to be released, is actually going to have footage of that meeting. Which,
wow!
If you think about Cillian Murphy and David Warner as an important role in the Tron franchise, that'd be really fascinating to see, I think.
That blows my mind that we're already
really
talking.
Blow your mind,
no, we're already talking about the next Tron film. It's probably not going to be out for another few years. I mean, based on the last gap, yeah, it's probably not going to be another 20 years.
That's true. So,
something else we've waited a while for: sequels to The Matrix, Reloaded, and Revolutions. Simon, you're excited, or are you?
This is ridiculous. This is ridiculous. I don't see where they can go with this.
I mean, didn't they
pretty much solve everything?
Isn't Keanu Reeves just messing with you?
I reckon that, in fact, the whole first three films were, in fact, within a different dream. So there was a dream within the dream, and there's all, you know what I mean? And they'll be like, oh.
So the machines are actually batteries for another set of machines.
Yes, there we go.
Wow, we are writing it.
So there are machines within.
Let's do that.
And therefore,
let's give up our jobs and go and write The Matrix. We're brilliant.
Yeah, I think so. But I don't understand where they're going to go with this. Keanu Reeves let this slip in. Well, he didn't let it slip. He mentioned that apparently.
I think he's messing with you, man.
Wachowskis were talking about Cloud Atlas, and then they were talking to Warner Brothers about 4 and 5, which are going to be in 3D. It's going to be a new type of action, which nobody's ever seen.
Well, that's what they did last time, so they're just going to do, you know.
Is Keanu Reeves making up shit?
Maybe.
Bill and Ted 3? Really?
No, he's definitely doing it.
Yeah, Matrix 4 and 5? Really?
No.
I think he's just pulling everybody's tail.
Pulling your tail, that's for sure.
Okay, then.
Okay.
The big guns.
Yes.
Oscars.
Okay, I'm excited.
Right, first off, we've been told by Mad Hatter not to use the right term, snubbed. He wrote a letter into us. We've yet to discuss it.
Okay, well, snubbing. I'm going to say right off the bat, Christopher Nolan has been omitted from the best director list. I think they probably could have omitted Tom Hooper or David O. Russell from that list, put Christopher Nolan in there for Inception. Inception is up for best film. That's great news. Up for some technical awards as well. Should be up for best director. The direction is incredible.
Well, the thing is that I was reading a blog post about how they nominate for these different things, and the fact of the matter is that if everybody voted for Chris Nolan if everybody voted for Chris Nolan for second place, and then, you know... And
16% voted for David O. Russell in first place,
yeah,
then... It's maths, Simon. Yeah.
And I just kind of think, you know, so maybe it's just a weird voting system. But c'est la vie.
Another surprise, Jeremy Renner, best supporting actor for The Town. I think that came a bit out of left field, but it's the second year in a row he's been nominated. I don't think he's going to win, but it's just interesting.
Should have been Pete Postlethwaite for his role in The Town.
Okay. He's not in it enough, to be honest. Jeremy Renner is in it a lot, and he's very good. So, you know.
Well.
And Hayley Steinfeld, who they said might get Best Actress nomination, but in fact Jennifer Lawrence has got the young'un there. She's got a Best Supporting Actress for True Grit. So, couple of young'uns, probably not going to win in the ladies' categories. I think we're going to go Natalie Portman and maybe Melissa Leo. But interesting, no?
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, I'm glad because of all the Best Picture nominees, we've actually covered all of them on the podcast at one point or another.
Wow.
Except two.
Oh, right.
And that's The Fighter and True Grit.
Which we will cover.
We will cover, definitely.
In February, probably, I would say.
Exactly. And it won't even take long. But as soon as they're out, you know, we'll watch them the opening weekend and we'll discuss them. But I think that's really great because, I mean, those two, once I've seen True Grit and The Fighter, that's like half the other nominees done. I think I've done all categories.
Well done.
And Rabbit Hole, Nicole Kidman.
Oh, okay.
She's been up for Best Actress.
Are you going to watch that?
Well,
it looks pretty depressing.
I don't know, yeah. I mean, it just seems very kind of like a middle-aged marital crisis kind of thing.
Okay, let me talk to you a little bit about Best Foreign Language Film. Unfortunately, Simple Simon's missed out. I know, personally, that's a punch in your stomach.
Yes.
But Dogtooth and Beautiful, I'd say, are the front runners, although they usually pick a... Because Hollywood doesn't really get foreign language films, they usually pick a complete outsider. I'm obviously going to back Dogtooth. You're obviously going to back Beautiful.
Yeah.
We'll probably fight about it.
But then I've got to see Dogtooth. I mean, like I said last week, I've got every intention to watch it. in the future, so yeah.
Best animation, we're presuming Toy Story 3, that's a shoo-in?
Yeah, no, I reckon Toy Story 3 is probably going to take it, definitely.
I would hope that The Illusionist would take it, just to kick sand in everyone's face.
I'll tell you what, I am gutted that I've missed How to Train Your Dragon.
Really? You're more gutted about that than gutted. The Illusionist?
Yeah.
Oh, that is everything that's wrong.
You have no idea. Have you heard what they've said about How to Train Your Dragon in 3D? No. It's supposed to be incredible. No. And that's not the best animated feature.
How
probably
can
won't
it be?
Get it,
Gerald Butler is doing one of the voices.
Yeah. Well, documentary feature, Exit Through the Gift Shop, Gasland, Inside Job, Restrepo, Wasteland.
Oh, you saw Wasteland.
Wasteland, yeah, we discussed that on the podcast a while ago.
I do want to see Exit Through the Gift Shop, and I do want to see Inside Job.
I think a few of them I will actually try and hunt down before the Oscars.
I'm in documentary, so I probably should.
Yes, you should. Indeed, you should.
Okay.
So I think we've got... I think it seems pretty obvious that a lot of these ones seem to be pretty much on the cards, don't you think?
I think it's got... What we've got here is we've got a lot of nominations for the old True Grit. There's 10 there and 12 for King's Speech. But I think actually we're going to see a big spread. I think there's no film going to dominate, win like 5 or 6. I think a film is going to win a couple. Lots of films are going to win a couple. That's my feeling. The Fighter is going to win a couple. Black Swan is going to win a couple. Inception is going to win a couple. Best film... I say
tentatively
right now.
I mean, this isn't
I
your
say,
vote.
I'm not allowed to vote. I'm not an Academy member.
Yeah, it's true. But what would be your initial kind of verdict?
Inception.
Really? Yeah. To win?
Hopefully.
I'm going to go a bit out there. I think King's Speech might nab it all.
Social Network. Oh, it's tough. Social Network.
I think King's Speech
Social
might.
Network going to get soundtrack. It's got to get someone else as
King's
well.
King's Speech might nab
best
it all.
Best director. David Fincher, best director. I don't know, we're just babbling now.
King's
this is turning into
nonsense. I keep saying the same thing. King's Speech, I reckon it might
all 12, you're saying
not all 12, but I think it might get actor
supporting actress, Helena Bonham Carter?
No.
That's quite an open category.
Maybe supporting actress, I don't know.
Supporting actor, Geoffrey Rush?
Yeah, see, Geoffrey Rush won't get that, but I think King's Speech therefore might take the main prize, because I think King's Speech is, there's something which transcends, I think, across outside of England and to other people. I don't think it's unique. I mean, it's always the British have their one thrown in there, but I think this year it's on such a grand scale, it might nab it. I mean, Shakespeare in Love is, like, ridiculously British, you know what I mean? And the Shakespeare thing is ridiculously, you know, British, but the fact of the matter is that... you know what I mean? The story is a lot of romance, which obviously a lot of people got in America. I think it's possible King's Speech just might do the same.
All right, well, enough of this King's Speech malarkey. I'm saying Inception hopefully will win, but if not, then I'd like to see David Fincher win Best Director and Social Network take Best Film, because that's some golden stuff.
Well, we'll make our decisions in the near future, won't we?
There will be some predictions on your blog, I would have thought.
I think we'll have to have a bet and have a prize or...
There'll be prizes all galore, I think.
Yeah, of course.
Wow, that was incredible. And here we are, just right now, at the front door to the club.
Oh, I'm feeling it. Oh my god.
What are you feeling, Simon?
Oh, the beat. I'm
are you literally
headache.
Feeling
that
tight?
Is like, that is in my ear.
Okay,
it hurts
well, let's go in,
much.
Let's see the people and get the shit out of town, because, you know, we don't want it to be too bad for you. Okay? Firstly, come on, who's in there?
Facebooker of the week is Scott. From the old Frankly My Dear podcast.
Right.
He's actually released a special podcast on Jurassic Park.
Wow.
It's like a...
Okay, you're so excited. You want to talk to him. Go and talk to him. Son.
Well, I'm talking
to him. And talk to him about Kevin Smith as well.
We are talking about Kevin Smith, and he tells me his favourite Kevin Smith film is Chasing Amy.
He did do that on Facebook. That
now,
is true.
I've got to tell you, Chasing Amy is one of the worst ones. I think the whole kind of
what?
Like... Oh, she's a lesbian.
It's a great
but
one.
She fancies the guy. And she...
It's more complicated than that.
So they say. It's just a stupid, like, oh, can you convert someone? Yeah, come on. It's just a silly.
All right. What's your favourite one?
My favourite one was Dogma.
Okay, all right.
Of course.
There's a lot of people's favourite one, to be fair.
Maybe
Red State will be our new favourite one.
Who knows?
And look, talking of Twitter, which Kevin Smith is obviously on a lot.
Yes.
Here's our Twitterer.
Twitterer. JG Byrne. AKA at Fustar, F-U-S-T-A-R.
What did he talk about?
Me and him had a bit of banter about The Matrix. He says Matrix 2 and 3 were crap. What do you think?
No, I liked them.
You liked them? Oh, yeah. I don't think you did.
Okay. Wow. We're learning stuff in the club this week. Wow.
But the point is that he hates them, and a lot of other people do. In my opinion, I think they're really good, and I think the only thing which holds people back is sometimes some of the dense philosophical stuff.
That the people don't like them don't get it. That's what you're saying.
Yes. But there's a documentary on it, which is really easy to find.
So is Foodstar now going to look out the documentary?
I gave him the YouTube link, and he's now...
That's generous.
He said he'd watch it.
Why doesn't he buy the box set?
Because he said he doesn't like the second and third one. He thinks they're rubbish. So,
All right. Fair enough. All right. Well, nice to see you, JG Byrne. Who else are we seeing? Oh, look, it's a bloody blogger.
It's Nick. From Random Ramblings of a Doorknob, Demented Doorknob.
Yeah,
we'll put the link on the page. It's a long link.
He used to do a podcast. Is he doing another podcast?
He does do a podcast as well, still a different one now, where he has different people on it on a weekly basis.
And he does a vlog.
A vlog. Now, this
no,
is...
No, it's a vlog.
It's a vlog, then. A vlog. But the point is that he actually...
Just saying.
I watched it, and I always thought it was just him speaking, which, I won't lie, it is a bit ridiculous and not very clever and not necessarily very good, despite the fact that we have videos of us just speaking. So, but the point is that normally...
No, it's funny, yeah? It's funny sometimes.
Normally, I think that's pretty rubbish. So I watched it. It's a lot more than that. It's well-edited. It's quite funny.
Hold on, ours are well-edited.
Yeah, I'm not saying that ours are bad.
I think we should leave this club. Not happy.
Nick's vlog...
A headache now.
I've watched the first two episodes and he's got like loads, so, and I'm thinking, oh my god, I'm going to watch more of these, so I advise others to do the same.
Alright, well, I'll watch him, but I'm not happy about your criticism. Thanks very much, Nick, we'll see you later, yeah?
Oh god, jeez, he's not happy. Let's get out of here. Okay, but now we've got the box office. Now, what is the box office this week? Is it UK?
Yeah, it's UK. From the weekend just happened, but the whole of the UK. So, you know, a bit different from last week. Got, obviously, a new entry or two in there. 5 is Gulliver's Travels. An absurd amount of money. Made, like, $21 million in the UK. And even though it's obviously rubbish...
It's that stupid 3D-ness. It's the 3D.
You know, and number 4, another rubbish film that's doing all right.
Ron Howard, Oscar-winning director, comes...
The Dilemma.
It's a dilemma.
Yeah. Apparently Winona Ryder is the best thing in it, which is a surprise. And Jennifer Connelly has lowered herself to this level.
Wasn't she nominated for Best Actress?
Who?
Jennifer Connelly.
I don't think so.
Not for Beautiful Mind?
For Beautiful Mind? Best Supporting, probably.
Maybe. I don't know. I can't guarantee
all right.
That.
Let's make stuff up. Green Hornet. What facts can you invent about that? Michelle Gondry, he probably won Oscars, didn't he? He probably should have done.
He should have done for a Charles Franchise, of course.
Good. Yeah.
Yes.
Even though they might have been nominated for the screenplay on that.
I think you're right. Yeah.
Okay,
definitely.
Okay. Knowledge.
Number
coming
2.
At you.
Black Swan.
Talked about it so much already. That was a incredible
convo. Number 1, The King's Speech.
Oh, boring.
You haven't seen it?
Yeah, yeah.
You have not seen it?
It's a funny story, because obviously my mum's seen it, so that's slightly embarrassing. My gran has...
Can we have your mum on the podcast to discuss it?
My gran's seen it now.
Oh, God.
It's funny, because last time I went to the cinema with my gran, we went to see The Matrix, which was, it's not a film you see with your gran, but it was pretty
phenomenal. So next week,
and now
The Simon and Joe's Nan's Show.
Yeah.
Can we have that? Does that work?
Maybe. Give it a try. Ring her up.
Give her a buzz. Get in contact.
Maybe she'll be our Twitter of the week.
Maybe, if we're lucky.
Yeah, okay. So that's the chart. King's Speech already made $30 million in the UK and, getting ovations left, right and centre from people apart from Joe.
Okay. New releases. Do you want to... You got 2.
Yeah, I got 2. I got Tangled.
Okay, Tangled. This is Disney. This is
Rapunzel,
kind of computer-generated
3D,
kind of thing. Yeah, go on.
References, Prince Charming. You know, Mandy Moore does the voice. Is that
great.
Exciting?
I don't care.
No, I don't care.
Hereafter.
Yeah, Clint Eastwood, who I don't really like either. So again,
Sarah really wants to watch this, but it's got not great reviews. I remember it was available in America when we were over there, but at the time we weren't fussed, and I'm not fussed now.
Well, it was written by Peter Morgan, who wrote The Queen and stuff like that.
That's pretty good. Yeah,
that's pretty good. But I don't like Clint Eastwood. I've got a feeling some of this was filmed in Peckham, in South London.
Oh, cool.
So I don't know if that impresses you.
Not really. Not
okay,
much.
All right, well, we're not going to see it. It's about life and death, so that's not important. Let's watch films about football instead. What are your new releases?
Well, I had Barney's Version, which I'm going to talk about more in a moment, because that's just been released. And Beautiful, which me and Joe saw.
Exciting.
Hold your horses. It has been nominated for Best Foreign Picture.
And I saw Bardem got the nomination.
And Bardem got the nomination for Best Actor.
Well done. So, and, oh, gossip, Bardem... has his wife, Cruz, Penelope Cruz, she just had a kid.
Popped one out.
Yeah, well, I would say it's probably a bit harder than that. I don't want to undermine childbirth.
Come on,
I think that's pretty
it's
tough.
Easy. All the blokes I talk to tell me about.
You're going down the same road as Andy Gay and Richard Keys. A football UK joke. It's gone over the head of so many people.
Okay, nevertheless, I recommend Beautiful a lot. It was in my top 10 of last year, despite it being released this year.
I take away that recommendation.
But yeah, hilarious. And me and the Oscar people can recommend
agreeing.
We all recommend it.
Okay, well, you can. More reviews after this.
This week's show, we've got two more brand new films still at the cinema.
Yeah, packing them in this week, aren't we, Simon? Really packing them in.
Well, indeed. And the first one up is a British film, NEDS.
Yeah, NEDS.
Tell us more.
Stands for Non-Educated Delinquent.
You know a lot about that, don't you, Joe?
Yeah, it's basically my life story, Simon, except it's set in Glasgow in the 70s. I wasn't around then, or in Glasgow for that matter. Basically what it is it's a story of this one kid called John McGill, who's pretty good in school, but his brother's a bit of a tearaway, and he's kind of on the cusp of adulthood. I guess he's 12, 13, so he's going through a rites of passage. And, you know, his life basically falls apart because he decides to join the gang that his brother's in, and he goes a bit bloody nuts. It's kind of like This Is England, where the young kid joins a gang and it all goes a bit nuts, except it's in Scotland, and it's not quite as stylish, I wouldn't say, as that film. Yeah, it's directed by Peter Mullen.
And Peter Mullen, he done the Magdalene Sisters, which I saw. I like that.
He's better known as an actor. He's done My Name is Joe.
Oh, yeah.
With Ken Loach and stuff like that. Magdalene Sisters about 8-10 years ago, I think.
Yes.
But here he is, his next film. And he actually plays the alcoholic father of John McGill in this film. There's an interesting father-son relationship. There's an interesting relationship. It's mainly between young people, you know, how they relate to each other. There's some very unpleasant violence, and there's an awful, awful lot of swearing. Fortunately, the Scottish accents are very strong, so you can't really understand much of what's being said.
That's offensive, no?
Well, you know, I don't know. It's all right to a point, because it's authentic, but at the same time, I felt like I was missing some important plot points when they would really lay it on and you would lose certain bits. That was my personal feeling. I felt like I lost stuff.
So okay, I mean, let's get, you know, that's obviously what it's about. Did you like it? Was it any good?
Yeah, it was all right. It never really got going, I don't think. It had some interesting moments, but it was much too long. Had, frankly, some rather bizarre moments. John uses an empty crisp packet and some glue and gets high, and then a Jesus statue hugs him.
Nice.
So there's weird stuff like that happening.
Warm.
And then there's extreme, like, gang violence happening where you're like, oh, come on, fight each other. And then there's, you know, there's kind of this class issue going on, which is interesting because he is an intelligent guy and he should be doing better, but it's suddenly, you know, he just suddenly changes. And it's a very sudden change. And Peter Mullen says that's how quickly it can happen, but it does feel a bit
pushed. Is there a comment on maybe that people are not doing enough to support these people, or they didn't do enough back in the day?
I think it's a very authentic picture. I think, the teachers are smoking in the classroom, they're not very nice to these children, there's no hope. In fact, when he's doing successfully in class, he's kind of picked out as a SWAT, and teacher tells people to bully him. So, you know...
Really?
That's
not good... As a teacher myself, that's not good practice.
But maybe that's what it was like in Glasgow in the 70s. I don't know, but it is a very gritty film. It's definitely an 18 certificate, very unpleasant. And just the violence is just, you know, these kids don't really know what they're doing. They don't understand what the decisions they're making. And I guess that's the most important thing about it, is it is... A rite of passage, and so, you know, the kids go through some unpleasant experiences, which was certainly
rite
true.
Of passage would imply that that's just what happens. And
I think that is what happened in Glasgow to a lot of working class family. You know, they just didn't have an opportunity, and so they turned to, you know, mighty unpleasant stuff.
Oh, really? Yeah. Well, the director, what is it? Is it Peter Mullen?
Yeah, that's correct.
In Sight and Sound, he was in that, and they were talking about how the father figure, though it's not in any way an autobiographical account, there are aspects of it which is true to his experience and when he was younger, and that to some extent the father figure is based on his own father. Virtually everything he says is what his father had said at some point or another during his childhood. Is there a certain element of real personal link there, where you can see there's a certain truth to
it? Yeah, I think when we're talking about the father does use language very well. He's very unpleasant, and he's not in it very much. But when he does, the stuff that he says is very, you know, blunt and unpleasant. And, you know, and it shows the change. You know, there's one scene where the father is, you know, in control, and then there's a later scene where the father's not in control. So, you know, in that sense, it feels slightly cliched in that sense. The movement is very choreographed. For example, John is friends with a middle-class boy, but then within, you know, 5 minutes of the film, you know, he's been rejected, and that's part of the reason he turns to a gang, you know, several other reasons as well. But it feels like there's plenty of ciphers, to be honest. The teachers are very one-dimensional, and it's just, there's not really, he's got an aunt who comes back, and she's played by Mariana Pulka, and she's interesting, but again, it's just to show how much he's changed. Her reaction to him is just a way to show that. There is a scene towards the end where he gaffer tapes knives onto his hand.
Wow. It goes a Kruger
bit,
style.
Yeah, it goes a bit crazy, but it never really goes anywhere. It just kind of runs out of steam. He runs out of steam, and the film runs out of steam.
Oh, right, okay. But if you like, what type of film do you think? If you like what?
If you like Scottish, gritty, angry nihilism, then yeah, it's your bag.
Okay. Fair enough.
What are you going to talk about? Hopefully something a bit more fun than Ned's.
Yeah, well, you say that. Barney's Version, which is directed
Paul
by...
Paul Giamatti's in it.
Paul Giamatti is Barney. It's about this kind
not
of...
a purple dinosaur, I hope.
It's almost a life story of it. Now, with the Oscar nominations come out, Barney's Version actually is up for Best Makeup. Did you see that?
No, I didn't see that. Great. But Paul Giamatti's not up for Best Actor, although he did win a Golden Globe.
Yes,
so,
well, that's it.
You know.
But with that in mind, you know, it's because it very accurately portrays virtually the entire life of this character Barney, from about his mid to late 20s straight through to, you know, late like 60s. He's graying, he's very old, and ultimately he gets very ill at the end. But the story is basically built around how he had basically, when he was quite young, he had a few marriages. He had three marriages. And it shows how carefree he was, how romantic he was, how he was a man who was invested in the arts, and how these things had ramifications, how they affected his life as he got older, and his friendships as well.
Okay, well, you saw this for free last weekend at
yeah.
the Clapham Beer Jazz. I had tickets. People who follow us on Twitter will know, you know, I tweeted about the success of getting tickets and then the fail of knowing that I couldn't go. So I was disappointed not to be able to go. I love Minnie Driver, I love Rosamund Pike.
Yeah.
You know, Paul Giamatti, he's fine. Why not? Dustin Hoffman, great. So I'm tempted still to see this. Tell me what you thought, Simon. Can you convince me to see it?
Yeah, no, okay. First off, it's not my favourite film of the year so far.
No, you've seen some pretty good ones already this
year,
though.
Yeah, I guess. And whereas, I definitely feel, at the end of the film, I was virtually in tears.
Wow.
No other film I felt like that.
See, I thought it was going to be a comedy, but apparently not.
Well, this is it. I mean, on one side it is. But, I mean, Dustin Hoffman, his performances are incredible. like I said, the way it flashes back and forth from Paul Giamatti's later life, so you know from the outset that he is divorced from the woman who he eventually marries in his third wedding, his third wife. You know that he eventually is divorced from her. But there is something really quite poignant about it, because I mean, I hate the title. First off, I think it's a rubbish title, Barney's Version. I mean, it sounds
You know, it does remind me of a purple dinosaur.
It does. I mean, of course it does. And then you know, I don't know, it's ridiculous. But the fact of the matter is that it is about his perspective on things and his memories on things, and then therefore you've got a little bit more. You know, reflection then on the nature of memory and how important memory is. And then as we get to old age, how memory loss can be a huge issue. And I think for me personally, I think there's something really quite beautiful and romantic about old age and about, you know, people who are in love at a very old age. And there's something really beautiful about that. And I think that's what got me, is that it gets to a point whereby you've seen his attitude to life and you might not agree with it. And in many ways, I don't. I mean, his attitude to Minnie Driver's, his second wife, she's a lovely woman and she's a bit annoying. I think she's painted that way, but obviously that's his version. I think on the other side of things, I kind of look at her and think, well, she's not that bad. Get over yourself, man. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But the fact of the matter is that he has a problem with her and they get divorced. And, you know, and you just think these memories of his, he just constantly flashing back to. And it's so sad because you just see how he just misses all these times and he just loved his life. And in that regard, I think what's so upsetting is that it's such a kind of celebration of life, no matter what it is, really. And it's so it's no regrets.
It's more sad than funny.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think it's supposed to have that edge to it. The problems is, I mean, it's not a great film. I mean, it's messy. There's a lot of stuff going on. There's this whole murder plot thing going on, which again is set up right from the start, whereby he, you know, what starts his first flashback is when he's reading a book about somebody who's charted his life, trying to point out how he murdered his best friend. So there's a certain tension. How did he kill his best friend? And why did he kill his best friend? And all that kind of thing. But then that kind of loses pace because it's not really about that. It's really about his life with his wife's, his romance between him and Rosamund Pike, which is so beautiful. And that thing, and it kind of loses, I think, a bit of focus when it kind of flits around to this murder storyline and then comes out about to another storyline here and there. And I just kind of feel like it just loses a bit of pace. I mean, you were there saying about Ned loses a bit of steam, and I think in a similar way it's like that. But at the same time, it's a great performance from Paul Giamatti, and the relationship between him and Rosamund Pike is great.
So Rosamund Pike is the best of the wives. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, I mean, that's the point, I think. I mean, that's a big part of it. I mean,
I think we're talking about Rachel Lefevre as the first wife, aren't we?
Yes. Yeah. I think so.
Yeah.
And she, you know, but again, you know, why was he with her? Why did he marry her? Why, you know, it's like you think he's made these mistakes, but at no point does it paint the picture that he's a bad guy. Though, upon reflection, you think about he is, but then it's all told from his side of the story. It's his version of the story. I kind of just think to myself, you could go two ways with this. You could go the one way where, you know, you could go very kind of almost like Charlie Kaufman's surrealist kind of thing, whereby you have all that kind of memory fading situation going on, where it's talking about, you know, how his memories of his life is kind of, he's losing track of it. And you could go that way, but they don't. It's all played very safe. It's almost played as a rom-com. That's not particularly good. And then you have this murder plot where they could go the other way and focus on that and have it more of a thriller. But that's not really the case either. It's just, like I said, it's just kind of this soft, oh, it's just, you know, it's just a guy and his love life and his friend and, you know, but it's got these really poignant things. So you kind of think it misses out on this opportunity. I say to the makers of this film, what they should do, rename the film.
Number one.
And number two, make sure, and basically I'd go the surrealist edge, go crazy with those memories, have them dotted around the place, reorganise the film in a really disjointed manner, so yeah. That the nature of memory,
no reshoots needed, just
yeah,
recut.
Just recut. Oh, well,
great.
Yeah, but I mean, it's shot as well in this very warm, almost Italian sun with those oranges and all that type of thing.
Lovely.
Going on, which is beautiful to look at, but all very, very safe.
Safe.
Nothing could have been more challenging.
I know what you're saying. Okay, well, you put me off. I'm probably not going to see it now.
No, it's cost them money. I don't know.
You've cost them money.
It's better than
for free as well. So.
I wouldn't have paid for it. I wouldn't have paid for it.
Okay.
I mean, I'm glad I've seen it.
Never paid for it.
It's better than I thought it would have been.
Good.
But that don't mean it's good.
All right.
That's that.
That's that. So two here, we're saying not really worth it.
No.
Okay.
Go to see Black Swan in my book.
Right. Yeah, they are. I've just had a McDonald's. That was tasty.
And alas, that's where we are in Clapham Common this week. To this week's episode.
I was pretty hungry, so I'm happy we were here.
Good. Oh, glad.
Got the snacks in. Yeah, that was a good episode, wasn't it, Simon?
Yeah, no, definitely.
A lot of Black Swan discussion. That was good.
Finally. Long time coming.
Well, you know, and then when it came, it came.
It did. It did come in many ways.
Yes.
And so that's that. Next week, we're going to be discussing, amongst other films, I Am Love.
Oh, romantic love.
So if you're... Tilda Swinton, yeah.
Italian.
Luis Guadagnino. I think that's Guadagnino.
That means almost nothing to me. You are really pronouncing
that. Io sono amore. That's how you say it in Italian. That's next week anyway.
Okay.
So if you're listening, watch it, listen next week and join in. It'll be a laugh. Literally.
No, it's quite a depressing film, isn't it?
Well, I'll tell you next
week.
I'll tell you next week. It's exciting.
Listen out for that.
The Simon and Joe Show, available on Facebook, Twitter, and screeninsight.co.uk. See you next week.